Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Real Estate Investor Goddesses podcast. I'm your host, Monique Hom. On this show, we interview amazing real estate investor goddesses, badass women who are investing in real estate, and today's guest is no exception. Our guest today is Erica Williams. She's a YouTuber and a small business owner who shows people how to become smartphone millionaires, and we're going to talk more about what that means. She created a channel on YouTube called The Classy Climb to change the perception of what a real estate investor is, quote-unquote, supposed to look like. She started Classy Climb after closing a business in North Carolina, moving to Texas. In Texas, while working as an apartment manager, she learned about apps, real estate investing, and how to get into partnerships to grow her income. 6 years later, her YouTube channel makes a healthy six figures a year in sales via courses, consulting, and she's making a huge impact in the internet community. On the Classy Climb channel, she shows people how to grow their skills, money, and time to help their families in these changing economic times. And she's on a mission to educate, empower, and inspire people interested in building wealth through real estate investment and investing apps. We share a similar mission in that way. So when she's not working or looking for her next investment, she's enjoying outdoor music concerts in the great city of Austin, Texas. So welcome, Erica. It's great to have you here.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Erica Williams from the Classy Clown blog.
Thanks for being on the show. So I always like to start in these interviews from the beginning. So I mentioned it a little bit when I was sharing your bio, but tell us more about how you got started in real estate investing. You know, what made you want to get into that game?
So to kind of give people a little background on my family, we were from North Carolina, in the 80s, farm crunch times. Everybody in the family kind of went military, police officer, some type of, some kind of new career-ish, if you would say. But along the way, I learned about, as a kid growing up and as getting older, what tax liens were because of family situations, because of just life, right? And while I was in North Carolina before closing my business, I went and I tried to buy a tax lien off the auction steps of North Carolina, in the federal where I was at. And I kept getting upset bid, right? And I eventually didn't get the property, but it just made me dive in deeper to learn about everything, whether it was farming, whether it was, vacant lots, whether it was, seller financing, everything, right? At the time, it just made me spark this interest in me to find out more about real estate.
Okay.
And that's kind of
let me go back. Because I'm still until probably 3 or 4 years ago, I'd never heard of the word tax lien or the phrase tax lien. Mm-hmm. So you're a younger woman. What made you go, I want to invest in tax liens? What was it that made you say this is an interesting thing for me to do?
So there were tax liens, and in North Carolina is kind of a weird state, but it's more tax deed than tax lien, but it's mostly still tax lien. And essentially there was tax liens on our family's properties. And I was like, what does this mean? I don't understand. And so I got this whole learning lesson of what it meant, and also seeing some of my family members go invest in tax liens in South Carolina. So I learned a ton of things hands-on, and it was a great lesson.
That makes sense. So then you have that very personal experience with tax liens, and then you got deeper into it. And then what was the first thing that you actually purchased?
So I ended up purchasing some vacant lots in North Carolina with the mindset and purpose to put trailers on them. And in the end, I ended up selling, I ended up selling both of them. And when I got to Texas, as I was working in apartments, I was like, hey, man, I could go back and do 10x what I could have did in North Carolina, because North Carolina, in comparison, was so cheap. I'm in Austin, Texas, which is very expensive, right? Mm-hmm. So I ended up doing a partnering deal with my mother, ended up doing another partnering deal with a friend. I ended up buying more vacant lots in South Carolina and North Carolina. all with the intention to, you know, put mobile homes on them. So certain states, you can still do mobile homes, two or three on a piece of property. Not all states, though. A lot of states have been kind of like, I would say zoning laws have changed for certain areas. So just imagine these lots mm-hmm. are usually more on the country or the edge of the city, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's kind of how a lot of that got started.
Okay. So you bought these lots and to put mobile homes on them. So, for those of you who've been following, you know, I have an investment in a mobile home park. One of the beautiful things is, you know, somebody comes, they put their home on it, and they pay you a rent mm-hmm. to be able to have their home on that. And they're not all that mobile once they're
moved. Oh, yeah.
Or was it trailers or was it like manufactured homes that they were putting on those lots?
So where the part where my grandma's is that's a manufactured home. But on the other side is trailers. Mm-hmm. So the thing about trailers is, especially in North Carolina, if you own the land, you pay no transportation fee. Like, so they come, they set it up, as long as you have your septic tank, you know, connected to the property, you're good to go, right? So mm-hmm. That's why they make so much money, because people, once they own the land, can do what they want, right? They get this almost, you know, delivery free, set up for free situation. And that's why it became easy for people.
Yeah. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. So you started off with these lots and getting mobile homes and trailers on your property. Now, where are you now? What are your current investments?
So right now it's like, imagine 10X on 10X, right? Like steroids, right? So just to give a short, condensed it is, I own like 4 Detroit properties with a group. Then I'm going to do 2 rehabs in the spring in Detroit. Then I'm going to do 2 more house purchases in Charlotte. I'm in the process right now. Then here in Texas, I bought some land in Granbury, Texas, which is way up near Dallas. I have 1 land lot in Florida, and now I'm trying to acquire some property closer to Charlotte, but it's really Concord. So that's kind of, I have several doors, if that makes sense, in various partnerships and some by myself. I even got 1 property for $1. I did a video on that. People love that. It really was just it's a subject to property. It's a creative financing situation. But essentially, I just alleviated a family who had basically an adult child living at home. And they're like, hey, we just want to rent this house out and be free of our problem. And so that's all I did is solve their problem. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Love it.
If that makes
love
sense.
It, love it, love
so
it.
Only other thing I'm trying to build myself up to, I'm sorry. I was saying the only other thing I'm trying to build myself up to is I joined some apartment investing groups here. But like every deal they do, it's like, it's so fast. It's like, it blows my mind, but it's really awesome. But it's a group in Dallas and a group that's trying to buy stuff up in Birmingham. So that's something on the horizon for this year, if I can get into one of those.
Into an apartment syndication?
Yes, an apartment syndication.
Okay. Yeah, great. Yeah, oftentimes you have to be able to move fast with very fields, right? Be able to make quick decisions and get in the game quickly. But you have quite a breadth of different types of investments and different markets and a lot of diversity in what you're investing in and where. So, you know, what is it? This isn't so, you know, for you listening out there, I normally give my guests some questions beforehand so that they can think about the answers. But I'm going to ask you a question that I haven't asked because, you know, as I'm hearing all of the different, the variety of different things that you are interested in and that you're investing in, How are you choosing your markets and asset classes and how are you choosing what you're investing in?
So the best answer is for the partnerships in Detroit. Basically, the group does a lot of due diligence before I even set foot in there. They've done a lot of due diligence. They have a lot of documentation you need, and really, I'm just throwing in a portion of income. right? Like, here's a portion on this property. Right. So go in on this property. So those four are kind of very easy. Get a check quarterly, keep it moving. The properties in North Carolina, the reason I picked the ones in North Carolina is because Bevel Fort Bragg, again, where I tell you about the farming, our family, I think across all our family members, probably like 30, 40 properties at this point. So, example, one of my cousins owns like all the houses around his mother, where his mother lives, right? So we know that area. We know kind of the prices. We know military renters for that area, kind of like the flow of the city. Charlotte, we know that area because we have another family member living there. South Carolina became a thing, and Florida. South Carolina became a thing because we had a niece and nephew who lived on the islands in Edisto Island. I don't know if you know where that is, but it's a very nice tourism area that's going to be booming even more. It's going to be like Hilton Head at some point here, pretty soon. And as I was doing tax liens in South Carolina, you know, I did get kind of get stuck with the property. But it wasn't bad. It was an empty lot. So I was like, well, this isn't terrible. It could be worse. And that's kind of how that rolled out. So those are the most that, like, so if you we were supposed to put it on a piece of paper, my markets are usually where someone can do the really good due diligence and management if I'm working with a group.
Yeah.
Or my two favorite areas, North Carolina and Texas, because I live here in Texas. I kind of have a thumb on the marketplace. Like before Apple was coming, I knew it was coming, right? Like the street I drive on all the time, all of a sudden that street had got repaired. The school had $7 million on both ends of the street it's going to be coming on. All of a sudden, all this millions of dollars were being invested in this area. And I was telling people, something's coming here. And people thought, well, what do you think's coming here? I'm like, I don't know. But if you look at the street and the progression, something huge is coming. And, of course, then you hear on the news, Apple's coming, picked Austin. So I was like, I like because I know I can see the area. Does that make sense? Like, I can kind of I feel like Austin's going to be the Silicon of Texas. Right. And people like laugh when they hear that because if you're in California, you're like, that's ridiculous. But then when you meet, you know, we get 157 people here moving a day. We've got 293 people moving to Dallas a day. We have sometimes 300 people moving to Houston a day. The people that are moving here to Austin, though, the bulk of them are company startups, smaller startups, and just companies relocating. So I feel like this is going to be. I mean, just prime example, I'll give you an example. 3 years ago, me and my friend were driving by this house, and it was a rental. And I was like, you know, I probably could get away with using my first-time homeowners again on this property because it's been 3 years. You know, you just need to have to wait 3 years. And he thought about it, and he was like, yeah, I'll go in half with you. So we walked the property. I'm like, man, it needs new carpet. This bathroom needs to be redone. I really don't want to spend, you know, this money to fix this stuff. He's like, you sure? This is a really great number. So it was $135,000 in Pflugerville, Texas. I go, no, literally the next 3 days, somebody else scoops it up. Like before I could even say, well, maybe I should change my mind. Like it was gone. And so now this same house, I drive by this area to actually look for other deals, just finished selling from the last owner for $285,000. So you went from $135,000 to $285,000. It just sold for $285,000. And I keep telling this story to people because I want them to know they're not alone, right? A lot of people think, well, I've missed the market. I've missed it. I'll never make money again. You know, there's no point investing now. It's too expensive. I just use that as a test for myself. You know what I mean? Like if you do that, again, this is what happens. You miss out on huge wins through, you know, hesitation or taking too long to do due diligence. So.
Yeah.
But that's also why I want to stay in this area and invest in this area.
Yeah. So you made a few really great points. One, these are things that I teach my goddesses in my courses too, because it's so important that you have a real familiarity with the market that you're investing in. And if you don't have the familiarity yourself, but you have somebody on your team that has that familiarity, because it really can sometimes see the difference of being on that right street where they're putting in all of that investment versus, you know, maybe a few blocks away where it's not going to be as valuable, or, you know, that one block that nobody wants to be on versus the block that will be worth a lot more. So that having that familiarity is so crucial. And the other point that you've made, which is really important too, is being able to make fast decisions. I just actually wrote something about that on the Facebook page about how, you know, one of the biggest, I think one of the biggest predictors of somebody's success as a real estate investor is how quickly they can make a decision, either yes or no. But being able to make quick decisions is so important in this business. And if you take too long, you know, he who hesitates or she who hesitates will often lose out on these opportunities. So it is important to be able to jump when you see something that's interesting. So those are great points. So Erica, my next question for you is, this is a question that I always ask because I feel like we learn so much more when things go wrong, when we make mistakes, versus when things go right. So what would you say has been your biggest mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Probably that Pflugerville house. That's probably the best example of waiting too long. I will also say my biggest mistake is not realizing the value in your marketplace, right? And so prime example, like when I was in North Carolina, I had the opportunity to get like a home seller financing. And it was an amazing deal because I would have just been renting the rooms out at college. And I just said, no, I passed on it. And so that same street, like I know this sounds like a broken record for me, but it's the third street on Greenville, North Carolina, where East Carolina University is. I had a chance to do a seller financing deal off of someone who knew our family. But I didn't do it because at the time I was like, I don't understand this seller. I don't understand that I'm going to still be paying this mortgage and it's not mine yet. And like I don't understand, right? So at that time on that street, duplexes were going for, if you look it up, your audience can Google it on their own. They were going for like $75,000 for a duplex. And as a person who's 20, you're like, I just don't know. And my mother was in Iraq, so I was nervous. I didn't have someone to like advise me. My dad lived in Alaska. So it was like, I don't know where to make this decision. Now that same street, those duplexes are like $200,000. So like, I mean, just two times. Like that's probably my biggest mistake because at the time the college I went, it was such a growing year for the college. Like the college went from like 7,000 students to like 25,000 students. And I was like, I don't know if this is a good idea. I don't know if this is a good idea to like, you know, pay mortgage to this guy. It's not in my name. I don't understand this whole seller financing thing. So I would say that's probably my biggest mistake.
Yeah. What did you learn from it?
What did I learn from it? I learned, you know, the key here is at some point you're going to have to educate yourself. And if you don't understand, you need to ask questions, honestly. Because if I'd probably asked him a few more questions, it would have made sense to me, right? If I'd have been like, okay, how does this work? And when will it be in my name? And like, you know what I mean? Like just, or getting help from people in that area, right? But I didn't really know a ton of older adults that I thought I could trust. I think my advisor probably could even give me advice on that deal. He was owning real estate in that area. But that's the thing. It's like, if you don't know something, do ask someone or build up a network of people you could ask, right? So don't ask your uncle who's never bought any real estate. I mean, like, ask people who know something, right? Like, go to RIA events. Go places where you can get good information. I don't mean just ask a stranger. I mean, like, get knowledgeable advice. That's my whole point, right? Like, a lot of my consulting calls, I feel like, are me just giving someone my advice on what I think they should do a lot of times, right? So that's what I learned from that. It's like, same thing with the Pflugerville thing. Like, ask somebody. Stop. Think about it. Ask somebody. Just double check, you know, and I think that's why I've moved so hard now because I feel like, oh, I missed so much time. Like, I'm going to go get a bunch more now, you know, so.
Yeah, so that's good advice. And I'm glad that you clarified that because I would not recommend to people that you invest in things you don't understand, right? So don't invest if you don't understand. But if an investment opportunity comes, make sure you ask the right people so that you can understand it. And then really understand what the opportunity is and what the risks and benefits are, and then make an educated decision. So great, that's really great advice. And you know what? I want to go back because there's something that you you talk about and you show people how to do, and as becoming a smartphone millionaire. And I want to ask you, what that means, and you know, what are some of the ways that people can use their smartphones to do well with real estate.
So I think I was in Texas for a year and a half, and people start talking about, I like would read Yahoo Finance, Yahoo Business. I mean, just what my degree was in. I still just study finance and stocks. Like, you know, I like invested in stocks in college, someone told me, and then I lost like 4,000 in penny stocks, but then I like learned better, you know. So I always was studying, and I was like, this gig economy conversation, these apps, like, what is that about, right? So as I started just literally from the palm of my hand searching on my phone, I started like just researching, testing different apps. And I was like, oh my God, someone could literally make like six-figure income from some of these, you know, or people could really just save thousands of dollars or invest thousands of dollars via their hand, which is their cell phones in their hand usually, in various companies and various stocks and various, you know, like not only can you make money, you can invest money. Not only could you invest in a company or invest in a startup. I mean, there's the sky is the limit. And if I could just like, I know that drive-through careers aren't, people use that cliche kind of thing, but it truly is. Like when you pick up your cell phone, the amount of opportunities are just endless. It's like rabbit hole endless. And so what I always recommend to people, even like people who get my book, is like pick two or three and just hammer it, right? Like if you're going to do, like when people are saying, Erica, I just can't make any money, you know, I got laid off, something happened. I literally go, open up your phone, go to your Play Store, and look through the apps, right? People see the most downloaded apps or the most activity apps usually. So let's say you're in your Android phone, let's use an example, and you're looking for, I want to do some deliveries for my car. Well, first you're going to hear DoorDash, Lyft, Uber, all that stuff, but if you actually keep scrolling through your phone, you'll see what's popular, like TaskRabbit. Or courier, local courier stuff where you're just dropping packages off to offices or Amazon Flex. There's just so many things you could do that it's, I mean, I really believe it's just hard for you to not have something to possibly tap into and do. Like, there's no reason by the end of the week you couldn't have raise your income up, you know, double, right? Like, and that's kind of where that it started. But then I said, well, what if you even use it to invest, right? Like, you go on the flip side of that conversation. You're a guy, girl, and you're working and you're making money. Now, okay, Erica, what do I do with my money? Well, anywhere from like a Mint app, BillGuard, Hello Wallet, Digit, Robinhood app, Stash Invest, all these different apps are out here, like at your fingertips to use, you know, and put your money into. And also, if you really look at it, there's over 50 crowdfunding real estate sites. You could just pick three. And every time you're putting, you know, $500 or $1,000 into some of these, Fundrise is just an example. It's the most popular example. You're getting 10% back on your money, 8 to 12%, but I'm just going to say 10% for the sake of argument. Where are most people getting 1% or 2% at? Most people are getting 2% from their bank, if that. And then when I say, hey, you can get 10% back on your money.
Yeah, exactly.
So when I sit here and I do a video and I go, hey, you guys can – you know, I don't know if you ever heard of the book 16% Solution, but it's talking about tax liens. And I would tell people, hey, this tax lien I just got in Florida, I'm going to get 18% back on my money. And people would look at me like I was on drugs or something. And I would be like, no, this is a real thing. So I just started, like, doing more videos on it, talking about it, you know, talking about laddering up your income and how I kept putting $25, $100. I would just – every time I got extra money, I throw it into my Lending Club app. Well, I looked up, I had over 600 notes at one point. And I was like, holy crap. You know, that just added up really quick. And what I learned out of all that is if you were really like, if you weren't just playing, if you weren't just putting $2,500 away, like if you're putting, $500 a week away or something of your choice, you would have an amazing portfolio. Like, I laugh every time I would print off my K-1 statements because – my CPA would be like, really? Like, it just be paper after paper after paper, like these long write-offs of notes and dividend stocks. But essentially, like, it was a light bulb went off. And if you hear some of the interest rates I hear in these phone conversations, it would blow your mind. Like, people are out here paying 22% interest on cars, 20% interest on cars, 18% interest on credit cards, 29% interest on credit cards. They're paying, I'm hearing a lot more people paying 10, 11% on mortgages. And I'm like, who gave you this horrible deal, you know? So on the flip side, they're paying these high mortgages. And when you try to tell them, hey, you can get 18% of your money tax-free. Or you can get, you know, some of these apartment investors, when they are doing these, you know, speeches when I'm in Dallas, they're talking about 23% returns. Like, you know, when I tell people this, they just don't believe it. And so I feel like if you know it, each one teach one kind of theory, like, hey, like, I'm just trying to share it so that you can't say you never heard of this or you didn't know, right? So that's kind of in the nutshell what's my phone
there. Yeah, great. That's such awesome advice. There are so many different ways that you can make money as a side hustle or invest. And you can definitely use your phone for real estate investments. And this is a good segue. I'm just going to do a teaser because Real Estate Investor Goddesses is going to have something coming up this year in 2019 where you'll be able to use your phone to invest in real estate. So stay tuned. Ladies, it's going to be really exciting. All right, so Erica, we have a couple minutes left, and I wanted to ask you, because you've done so many different things and you have a lot of success, to what do you attribute your success?
Probably that I'm stubborn. I attribute it to kind of being, I'm one of those kids that, like, I want to read about it. Like, show me, right? Like, you know, sometimes you're like, hey, don't touch the stove, it's hot. I'm like, are you sure it's hot? Let me see, right? And that can be good and that can be bad, but I think my family very much funneled my energy into reading. I had, like, three aunts who, like, in the summers would do the library thing. And so I would read all these books. And even in college, I had, like, really awesome, you know, I think right now, if I look at my mom's house, I think there's 300 books in her garage. And then right now in where I live, there's probably another 400 books here. So I'm like, I think when I was like a voracious reader for a little bit, but then I took a ton of action. Like, and I don't want people to miss that part of the story. Let me say that again. Like, I have all these books, but I would read something and I would immediately take action. I would test it to see if it was true. I would test it to see if it worked. I was like, I'm missing something. So I remember buying this book by Bob Rice, and I think it was called Alternative Answer. I went to the book, and it was giving examples of, you know, where to invest. And the first thing in the front of the book when you open it, it says Yale has $1 billion endowment fund. They only put 6% of it in the U.S. stock market. The rest is invested, you name it, everywhere. You know, farmland, timber, companies, you name it, equities, everything. So, in that moment, if it's good enough for Yale, it's good enough for me, right? And even on the flip side, like just thinking, when I started reading, I would read a book and I'd go, I'm going to attempt this. Well, when I got in that book, The Alternative Answer, half the stuff it was telling people to do, I was already doing it. And it had me at an intermediate investor. And I just laughed because I was like, wow, like, there's so much power with our phone, and it's all about your mindset. If you get that mindset under control, like, really the sky's the limit. And so I would say a little bit of it is stubbornness, a little bit is curiosity. Like, I want to see, like, let me see if this works kind of attitude.
Beautiful. I love it. Learn a lot and take action. Mm-hmm. So fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic advice. And Erica, for those people who want to connect with you, find out more about what you're doing, where can they find you?
Man, you can find me on YouTube. I have like 1,600 videos on YouTube. I do really great live shows. I bring on guests, other business owners to speak about it because, you know, you could come on here and be like, well, Erica, I don't know about that. But then if I keep bringing you person after person, you know, sharing what they're doing, showing you that it's real, that it's possible, it really opens up your mind. Like, you know, if I bring on some young kids, you know, younger people can do it. If I bring on some older people, you know, older people can do it. I just love showing that, honestly, people aren't alone, right? Like, if you're that one family member talking about real estate and your family doesn't want to hear it, that you can go to the internet, you can go to real estate conventions or conferences, you can go to RIA groups. There's people out there for you to connect with. And so that's kind of why I still do it. And like, it's a crazy lead magnet, you know, not just because it makes me six figures or whatever, which I'm very grateful for. and Uncle Sam is too, but like the side of it is connecting with people I never would have connected with any other way. Right. So I have people who are reaching out to me from
so what's the name of your
It's you can just Google me, Erica Williams. Erica Williams, Classy Klein.
All right. Classy Klein. All right. Sounds good. And we have time for a quick end of show Trinity. So it's a brag, a gratitude, and a desire. So what's your brag?
My brag is I help my nephew have his little lawn care business this summer, and he got a riding lawnmower. He's like 11. So, I mean, it's like, it's a quick brag. It was super cool. What am I grateful for? I'm really grateful for the opportunity. Say it again?
No, I was saying, well, brag. I loved your brag. So go ahead. What are you grateful for?
I'm grateful for the opportunity to, like, travel, be in Texas, be in good health. Like, every year I'm always surprised that, like, people get in car accidents and things happen, and I'm just grateful to be flexible and travel, honestly. And what's one thing I desire? One thing I desire is this summer I'm going to try to do a month in Italy. And we're, like, trying to get the Airbnb straight and everything. So I desire to make sure the company and the two employees I have get to a point where I can just be in Italy for the summer, technically a month. And that way I feel like I checked off my list.
Awesome. So shall your desire be, or so much better than you can imagine. Wonderful. That was beautiful, Trinity. You can connect with Erica. You can go Erica Williams, Classy Klein on YouTube, and you can connect with me at reigoddesses.com and check out our blog and other podcasts and some freebies and goodies we have for you there. And then join us next time for another great Real Estate Investor Goddesses interview. Thanks, and bye-bye.
Thank you.